All right, ready to dive into another landmark Supreme Court case. This time, we're tackling Hannah v. Plumer, a civil procedure staple that still keeps lawyers talking, you know, even today.
Well, it all comes down to a pretty basic question, right? Like, when you've got a federal procedural rule and a state law going head-to-head in federal court, which one wins out?
Oh, yeah. It's got that classic legal drama feel to it. You know, like those movies where the local sheriff squares off against the FBI.
No.
Everyone's on the edge of their seats waiting to see who's going to pull rank.
Exactly. And we've got, like, a whole stack of material to help us figure this one out. We've got the Supreme Court's decision, obviously, but also a legal brief that breaks it down, plus some really insightful notes, you know, just for us podcasters.
It's like having multiple perspectives, right?
Totally. Think of it like different lenses we can use to examine the same legal battle.
Love that. So let's set the scene. It's 1965, and we've got a resident from Ohio suing the executor of an estate in Massachusetts over a car accident. And get this, the accident happened in South Carolina.
Sounds like a recipe for jurisdictional confusion from the get-go.
Right. Already messy. But the real twist, the thing that really throws a wrench into the whole thing, is how they go about serving the lawsuit.
Yeah, service of process. It may seem like a kind of boring technicality, but trust me, it's absolutely crucial to any lawsuit. We're talking about how those official legal documents, you know, the ones that let a defendant know they're being sued, how those actually get delivered.
And that's where we get our legal clash of the titans. We've got Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 4D1, or FRCP 4D, if you're into the shorthand, which says you can just leave those lawsuit papers at the defendant's house. Easy peasy.
But then you've got Massachusetts law over here saying, nope, hold on a second. We require in-person delivery, two different sets of rules, both claiming authority. It's like a classic legal standoff.
High stakes.
Yeah.
And guess what? In the first couple rounds of this legal showdown, Massachusetts law actually comes out on top. Both the district court and the First Circuit Court of Appeals side with the state law.
Right. So it's state law one, federal rule zero.
It's kind of surprising, right? I mean, you usually think of federal law as the big dog.
Yeah.
The one that trumps everything else.
Yeah, that's the common assumption. But remember, we're in the weeds of civil procedure here. Things can get really complicated really fast. And this is where the Supreme Court comes in to play referee.
Here comes SCOTUS. Robes and gavels in hand, ready to lay down the law. And the decision they make in Hannah v. Plumer, it's a real game changer.
It is. And Chief Justice Earl Warren, a legal giant, you know, writes the majority opinion. He sides with the FRCP, saying that Rule 4D1 is totally valid under the Rules Enabling Act. And that act basically gives the Supreme Court the power to set the procedural rules for all those federal courts.
So Warren's basically saying, hey, federal courts, you've got your own rule book. Stick to it. Makes sense. But I can't help but think, what about that whole idea of keeping things consistent? You know, making sure that outcomes are generally the same no matter which court you're in. That way people don't go, you know, forum shopping, trying to pick a court just because its laws are more favorable to them.
You're totally bringing up the Erie Doctrine, which, like, usually favors state law in these kind of situations. But here's the thing. Warren clarifies that outcome determination isn't the only thing courts should be considering. He says that preventing form shopping and, you know, just ensuring that the law is applied fairly, those are just as important.
So it's like everyone plays by the same rules,
yeah.
Right? No one gets a special advantage. Level playing field.
Exactly. And to really drive that point home, you know, Warren brings the Constitution into it. He argues that if federal courts were constantly forced to follow state procedural rules, well, that would undermine their power, the power they get from the Constitution itself. Basically, he's reinforcing that idea of federal supremacy, but for federal procedure.
It sounds like Warren's drawing a pretty clear line in the sand, saying, look, federal courts, you're in charge when it comes to procedure.
That's a good way to put it. But as always with the Supreme Court, right, things aren't quite that simple. Justice Harlan, while he agrees with the final outcome, throws in a bit of a curveball. He writes his own little addendum to the opinion.
Oh, I bet. It wouldn't be a Supreme Court case without a little bit of back and forth. Got to keep things interesting.
I know, right. So Harlan proposes his own test. He asks whether the rule, you know, the one they're arguing about, actually affects those kind of basic human behaviors that states usually like to regulate. And in this specific case, he says the service rule doesn't really have much of an impact on how estates are handled. So federal law gets the green light. That's the question, isn't it? And honestly, it's one that lawyers are still wrestling with today. You see, Hannah v. Plumer didn't really give us a simple black and white rule. It's more like they set up a framework. you know, for analyzing these kinds of conflicts. And that framework, it really requires a balancing act, weighing those state and federal interests against each other.
So it's not just about like memorizing a list of rules. You've got to actually understand the big picture, the underlying principles, and know when to apply them in different situations. Sounds like a real legal puzzle.
Exactly. And honestly, that's what makes this case so valuable, especially for law students. It teaches you to think about the law critically, right? To look beyond just the surface and grapple with all those subtle nuances that make legal analysis, well, both challenging and super fascinating.
It's kind of like those optical illusions where you have to shift your perspective, you know,
yeah,
to actually see that hidden image.
Oh, yeah. I like that. A great analogy. It's like you have to train your legal eye to spot those little distinctions, those tiny details that can like totally make or break a case.
And that's where the art of lawyering comes in, right? Mm-hmm. It's knowing which arguments to make, when to cite certain precedents, and really just how to frame your case to persuade the court.
Absolutely. Hannah v. Plummer really is a great example of how a single case can become such a powerful tool for a lawyer. It's a precedent that can be used to argue for using federal rules to kind of push back against state laws that maybe, you know, seem to be stepping on federal procedural toes.
So it's like a secret weapon lawyers have, ready to pull out at just the right moment.
But here's the thing, and this is super important for every lawyer to remember. Hannah v. Plummer doesn't mean you just get to ignore state law altogether, right? It's more like a reminder that federal courts operate within this bigger legal ecosystem. And in that ecosystem, those state interests, they still matter a lot.
So it seems like it's all about finding that sweet spot, right? That perfect balance between federal power and state sovereignty. But how do you actually do that? How do you find that balance? Sounds incredibly tricky.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, there's no magic formula, right? No one-size-fits-all solution. Every case is going to have its own unique set of facts, legal issues, and it's really up to the courts and the lawyers arguing in front of them to figure out how Hannah v. Plummer should actually be applied in each situation.
So we're wading into, like, a legal gray area here, huh? Where even the experts might disagree on how the law applies.
And that's exactly where legal expertise and strategic thinking becomes so essential. Skilled lawyers can use Hannah v. Plummer strategically, right, to their advantage.
Hmm.
They can craft arguments that support their client's interests while also, you know, navigating all those complexities of both federal and state law.
So knowing the rules isn't enough. You have to know how to use them.
Right. Yeah.
How to make them work for you within the specific context of a case. It's like you can know the rules of chess, but that doesn't make you a grandmaster.
Exactly. And that's why Hannah v. Plummer is still relevant. I mean, even over 50 years later, it's a cornerstone of civil procedure. It's shaped the way countless cases have been litigated, you know, in federal courts all over the country.
It really highlights how much impact one legal decision can have on the whole system.
It does. And it also shows us that the law isn't like stuck in time, right? It's constantly evolving, adapting to new situations, new challenges. Cases like Hannah v. Plummer, they're like those guideposts. But it's up to lawyers and judges to figure out how to interpret and apply them in a way that reflects just how much our legal landscape is changing.
Makes sense. Okay, so shifting gears a bit.
Mm-hmm.
What does this all mean for someone who's not a lawyer? Someone who might find themselves, you know, caught up in some legal battle. What are the big things they should keep in mind?
Well, I'd say the main thing is just to remember how important it is to have legal counsel, especially if your case might end up in federal court. I mean, understanding federal procedure, how it interacts with state law, that's where an experienced lawyer can be the difference between winning and losing.
So it's like having a guide, right? Mm. Leading you through this dense, potentially dangerous legal jungle.
Right. And that lawyer can help you figure out what your rights are, see the strengths and weaknesses of your case, and, you know, help you come up with a strategy that gives you the best chance of success.
Okay, that makes sense. And for those people who are fascinated by the law, who really want to dive deep into all this legal precedent, Hannah v. Plummer, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, for sure. It gives you this awesome glimpse into how the Supreme Court works, you know,
mm-hmm.
how they tackle those complex issues, how they interpret past cases, and ultimately how they shape the law.
Okay, but let's get practical for a second. You mentioned earlier that Hannah v. Plummer basically established that federal procedural rules usually win in cases involving parties from different states, what lawyers call diversity jurisdiction, right? Could you maybe give us like a real world example of how that might actually play out?
Of course. Okay, so let's say you've got this contract dispute between, I don't know, a company in California and a supplier in New York. And the case ends up in federal court because, well, they're from different states. Now, there's this federal rule about the deadline for filing certain motions, let's say a motion to dismiss the case. But New York state law, it has a different deadline, maybe a bit more lenient, under Hannah v. Plummer. That federal deadline would probably apply, even if it means that New York company has less time to file their motion.
So even though we're talking about a New York company, and maybe even a dispute that's governed by New York contract law, the federal procedural rule still wins out because we're in federal court.
Exactly. And that's why it's so crucial for lawyers to know both federal and state rules of procedure. Like, inside and out, you have to know which set of rules is in play. And honestly, this is why Hannah v. Plummer can be such a trap if you're not paying attention.
Okay, I see what you mean. But didn't you also say that Hannah v. Plummer isn't a total free pass for federal courts to just ignore state law? So how do courts figure out where that line is when a federal procedural rule is actually stepping on a state's right to make its own laws?
Yeah, that's the big question, right? It's one that legal scholars still debate about all the time, that line between procedural and substantive, super blurry sometimes. I mean, you can have a rule that seems totally procedural on the surface, but then when you look closer, it's actually having a major impact on a party's rights under state law.
Could you give us an example, just so we're all on the same page?
Sure. Think about statutes of limitations. Those are laws that set deadlines for filing lawsuits. They might seem procedural, right, at first glance, but they have a huge impact on whether someone can bring their case to court at all. And that's a pretty substantive right.
Right. So a statute of limitations could actually prevent someone from getting their day in court, even if they have a legitimate claim, just because they missed some deadline. Definitely sounds substantive to me.
Exactly. And in those cases, courts will often defer to state law. They recognize that statutes of limitations are tied to specific policies and concerns that each state has. Things like, how evidence is preserved, how they find witnesses, even whether a case can go to court in the first place.
So Hannah v. Plummer might give federal courts more flexibility when it comes to procedure. But it doesn't mean they can just ignore state laws that deal with fundamental rights or interests.
That's the key takeaway. It's all about that balance, making sure the federal courts run smoothly while still respecting the state's right to, handle their own affairs.
So it sounds like Hannah v. Plummer, while it definitely cleared up some things, it also kind of opened up this whole new can of worms, all these new questions and challenges for courts and lawyers to, deal with. It's not just a simple federal law always wins situation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big part of what makes it such an important case, even today. It's still cited and debated. It's not just some historical footnote. It's this living precedent that still shapes legal strategy and arguments.
It's not just a case they talk about in law school. It's something lawyers actually use, huh?
Yeah.
Out there in the real world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's a good reminder that law isn't just about, memorizing things. It's about understanding the big ideas behind the law, knowing how to apply them to different situations, and honestly, being able to make a really persuasive argument. Those skills are crucial for any lawyer.
Okay, so for all those aspiring lawyers out there tuning in, Hannah v. Plummer is, required reading.
It's a great way to see how the Supreme Court tackles those really complex legal issues, how they interpret past cases, and how they shape the way litigation works.
And it seems like such a simple thing, right? How you serve a lawsuit. But it shows how even those little procedural details can have, massive ripple effects throughout the whole system.
That's right. And it's why understanding civil procedure is so important. It's not just about technicalities. It's about the rules of the game. It's the framework for how we resolve disputes, how we administer justice. Hannah v. Plummer really gets to the heart of that.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Hannah v. Plummer, what's the one thing you really want our listeners to walk away with?
I'd say this. Whenever you're dealing with a legal issue where federal and state law might clash, especially in civil procedure, think back to Hannah v. Plummer. It gives you a way to analyze those conflicts, but it's not like a simple equation you can plug numbers into. Right. You have to look at the facts of the case, what kind of rules are at odds, and what the impact might be on both state and federal interests.
And if you're not a lawyer, if you find yourself trying to navigate these legal waters, what's the best thing you can do?
Honestly. Get yourself a good lawyer. I mean it. Someone who really understands both federal and state law, who can fight for your rights and, guide you through all the twists and turns.
Yeah, can't stress that enough. It's like having a translator, right? Someone who speaks legalese and can help you understand what's really at stake.
Absolutely. And remember, Hannah v. Plummer, it shows us that even though federal procedural rules often win out, state law is still really important. It's this constant balancing act, a reminder that our legal system is this blend of federal and state power.
So next time you hear about a case where state and federal law are bumping heads, think back to Anna V. Plummer. Remember that tension between those two levels of legal authority. It's always there.
And who knows? Maybe you'll be inspired to do your own deep dive into legal precedent. It's fascinating stuff, and it's a constant reminder that even the most technical legal details can have a huge impact on all of us.
Well said. And on that note, we'll wrap up our deep dive into Hannah V. Plummer. Until next time, folks, keep those legal minds sharp. And remember, knowledge is power.